Hey, this is Eric Benson, the host of Climify, a podcast that connects design educators with climate experts to help bring more climate-safe projects into our design classrooms. Through my conversations with these climate leaders, I hope to help you climify your syllabi and to create the next generation of climate designers. In fact, at the end of each program, my guest co-creates a design assignment for you to bring into your classroom for your students. This season, we are talking to women leading the way in climate action through the lens of each of the drawdown.org solution sectors. You can tune in to Climify anywhere you get your podcasts or directly at climatedesigners.org/edu/Climify. And we'd love if you join in the conversation on Instagram or LinkedIn at Climify Podcast.
This is Incomplete Design History, a podcast that explores overlooked and ignored topics in graphic design history. It is our goal to deepen and expand the knowledge, understanding, and interpretation of design history. Because history is messy. It's incomplete. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Mandy Horton. George Harriman was a cartoonist, illustrator, and pioneer of cartoon comics. Crazy Cat was his most famous and popular comic strip. On the surface, Crazy Cat's formula boiled down to its goofy animal characters with satirical motives, as well as its slapstick comedy and energetic improvisation. But there was more to Crazy Cat. The storytelling methods were uncommon compared to other cartoonist styles of the time, using deep allegory, spiritualism, philosophy, social commentary, and racial satire. On still a deeper level, and what his readers didn't know, was how much Crazy Cat was a reflection of Harriman himself. He hid a part of his identity in plain sight. Not even his daughters knew. For over 30 years, Crazy Cat entertained and delighted readers, and then went on to inspire and influence many more artists that we know and love today. George Harriman was born on August 22, 1880 in New Orleans, Louisiana. His father, George Harriman Jr., was a tailor, and his mother, Claire Marie Morel Harriman, a stay-at-home mother. He was the first of five children in the Harriman family, followed by one younger brother, Henry, and three younger sisters, Ruby, Pearl, and Daisy. Harriman grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, until he was 10 years old, when his father decided to move the family to Los Angeles, California in 1890. Harriman and his brother Henry attended St. Vincent's Catholic School, where they studied grammar, natural philosophy, astronomy, metaphysics, Latin, German, and Greek. Harriman received honors in his penmanship, grammar, and geography. He would later credit St. Vincent's for the multilingualism in his cartoon comic strip Crazy Cat. In 1896, a 16-year-old Harriman joined the St. Vincent's Lyceum, a type of secondary school, which gave advanced students like himself the opportunity to continue their studies in English literature and the art of oratory. While he was at it, Harriman also studied Shakespeare and Aesop's fables. The next year, Harriman began his first newspaper job at the Los Angeles Herald, where he worked under established artists of the late 19th century, such as Robert Edgren and Homer Davenport, tracing their works as an engraver. He would later be let go from the Herald in 1899 due to budget cuts. Believing he could find a better job, Harriman moved to New York City. Except he struggled to find and keep a decent newspaper job until 1901, when he finally got his big break from William Randolph Hearst, who owned a comic strip syndication business, the Evening Journal. In the early part of his career, Harriman worked as a staff artist at six different newspapers in Los Angeles and New York City. In 1902, when he was still traveling back and forth from Los Angeles and New York City, Harriman married his high school sweetheart, Mabel Bridge, a 21-year-old dressmaker. The couple had two daughters, Mabel Toots Harriman in 1907, and Barbara Bobby Harriman a year later. They later settled down in a permanent residence in the Hollywood Hills, going to work for King Features Syndicate run by William Randolph Hearst, where he would stay until his passing in 1944. During the early years of George Harriman's career as a newspaper cartoonist, before he would pump out originals, he was tasked with covering local political campaigns and boxing matches working at the Examiner. Even though he wasn't into politics like his father or grandfather before him, Harriman was known for his exaggerated and absurd caricatures of boxers like Jack Johnson and local county sheriff frontrunner William White. However, Harriman wasn't satisfied being a news coverage cartoonist and began to experiment with his illustrations. He discovered that he liked to draw funny cartoons, playing with caricature tropes and language. Musical Moe's was one of Harriman's first original strips. After that, he had a number of early hit cartoons like Mary's Home from College, The Family Upstairs, Baron Mooch, and The Dingbat Family. There are multiple instances in each of these cartoons where a small black cat would make an appearance. Many talking animals would make appearances in 1908's Mary's Home from College, including a duck detective named Gooseberry Sprig, a dog named Mr. Busty, and a female black cat, which the other animals would refer to as Cat. On December 23, 1909, Gooseberry Sprig became its own breakthrough cartoon strip. It was where Harriman could experiment with his first all-animal cast. Unlike Mary's Home from College and Baron Mooch, where storylines had grown tired and bland, Gooseberry Sprig was consistently fresh and funny throughout its run. It can be inferred from its success and longevity that Gooseberry and his goofy adventures can be attributed to Harriman's joy of making the strips. When an artist is happy at their work, it tends to age well and flourish. Harriman definitely found a niche in illustrating animal cartoons. The characters Crazy Cat and Ignatz would eventually make their first appearance together in the margins of The Dingbat Family, just 1 month after its debut in 1910. The idea of giving Crazy and Ignatz a standalone strip came from one of the Evening Journal's office boys, Willie Carey. Carey had seen the small cat and mouse in The Dingbat Family strip and found the characters amusing. So Harriman made Willie another strip with just the cat and mouse. This went on for a couple of days. Willie came to Harriman with the idea, and Harriman drew it. Arthur Brisbane, Harriman's boss at the time, saw these cartoons and told Harriman to take the cat and the mouse from the Dingbats and use it. Make an extra strip. In reality, Crazy Cat single-handedly saved Harriman's career. The business manager of the Evening Journal at the time, Salomon Carvello, had told Harriman 6 months after the early success of the cartoon that he was actually on the verge of letting Harriman go. However, Carvello's two daughters happened to like the cat, and Harriman got to keep his job because of them. The success of Crazy Cat was incredible. Readers across the U.S. turned to the cartoon section of their daily newspapers to read the latest adventure. In the cartoon's first couple of years, Crazy Cat had Colonel John Jacob Astor, a wealthy business tycoon, as an avid reader. Astor was notable for being the richest person on board the Titanic. Unfortunately, neither Astor nor his dog Ignatz survived the sinking in 1912. Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States, was known to read Crazy Cat aloud at cabinet meetings. By 1918, Harriman was one of the highest paid cartoonists in the country, earning over $15,000 a year, which is worth roughly $300,000 today. By 1920, it is estimated that Crazy Cat had as many as 10 million readers. As a fan of the Arizona landscape, Harriman made many visits to Kayeta, Arizona to enjoy the scenery of rich desert landscapes like the Grand Canyon. Harriman gained a friendly relationship with the Navajo people across Coconino County and later incorporated the Navajo beauty prayer that he learned from them into Crazy Cat. It was Officer Pup who had a monologue similar to the prayer. Harriman's fictional Coconino County, based on the real one, was the home for Crazy Cat. He drew his characters in a cartoonish doodle in contrast to the more professional crosshatch landscapes. In Harriman's eyes, the landscapes highlighted Coconino County and made it seem more real. Crazy Cat was well known for its comical absurdities. Harriman humored and delighted his readers with gags regarding fate, Shakespeare, literature, and philosophical ideas, while alluding to the more serious social topics of racism and gender fluidity. Many of the fans of the cartoon asked about Crazy Cat's gender. Ignatz was characterized as male. However, Crazy Cat is referred to as both male and female. One of the most iconic gags in Crazy Cat is where Ignatz will go out of his way to throw a brick at an unaware Crazy's head. Crazy, while shocked, always appeared with hearts swirling around his or her head, taking Ignatz brick throwing as a sign of love. This could be seen to indicate that Crazy is a girl. Harriman even drew some early strips with a pregnant Crazy Cat. He would also often refer to Crazy as she and her. There are other recorded instances, such as in the early Crazy Cat cartoon movies produced in the 1920s and 30s under both Winkler Productions and Columbia Pictures, in which Crazy Cat is featured as an anarchic, slap-happy male. According to Harriman, Crazy Cat had no definitive gender, like a sprite or an elf. In an interview with film director and producer Frank Capra, Harriman said he didn't know if Crazy Cat was a he or a she. He went on to say, "I fooled around with it once, began to think of the cat as a girl, even drew up some strips with her being pregnant. It wasn't crazy any longer, too much concerned with her own problems, like a soap opera. Then I realized crazy was something like a sprite or an elf. They have no sex, so the cat can't be a he or a she." Unfortunately, the Crazy Cat cartoons did have a shelf life. Many viewers regarded Crazy Cat as challenging to read because of its sophistication of allegories and its biblical, spiritual, and philosophical gags that went over a good amount of people's heads. By 1943, Crazy Cat was declining in interest. A survey of newspapers would find Crazy Cat in 35 of them, compared with more than 1,000 for a very popular comic cartoon, Blondie. The slapstick humor of Crazy Cat was going out of fashion compared to other cartoons of the time, filled with warfront adventures and homefront situation comedies. But by this time, Harriman's physical health wasn't in the best of shape. In his early 60s, he suffered weekly migraines and his chronic rheumatism was getting worse. But Harriman kept making Crazy Cat strips until his last breath. The New York Journal American reported that Harriman kept turning out his daily comic strip with no hint that the artist was a sick man. After his death, King Features announced that they were discontinuing the Crazy Cat comics. They believed no other cartoonist could continue the strip since Harriman's humor was so unique. Over Crazy Cat's 30-plus year run, the cartoon grew to be very popular across the United States. So much so that fans could buy Crazy Cat stuffed animals or go see Crazy Cat movies on the silver screen. Harriman's impact on the illustration world was equally long-lasting. Artisan illustrators who would later become household names were inspired by Harriman's artistic creative style. Dr. Seuss, Charles Schulz, Stan Lee, Walt Disney, and even Patrick McDonald, the creator of the strip Mutts, and Bill Watterson, creator of Calvin and Hobbes, were influenced or inspired by Harriman's work on Crazy Cat. Theodore Geisel, otherwise known as Dr. Seuss, remembered how, as a boy, he used to eagerly wait for his father to bring home the Boston American newspaper so he could read Crazy Cat. In his cartoon Peanuts, Charles Schulz drew deeply from Harriman's themes of love and loss, sins and guilt. Like in Coconino County, a world devoid of humans, Schulz created a world devoid of adults. Even Schulz's Lucy football prank on Charlie Brown is similar to how Ignatz would throw a brick at Crazy. When Walt Disney was getting started, one of two of his early characters was a black cat named Julius and a mouse named Ike, no doubt inspired by Crazy Cat and Ignatz. Julius was Disney's first regularly occurring cartoon character in his movies. Years later, in 1928, when Disney created Mickey Mouse, many people speculated that he was inspired by Ignatz. In one of Harriman's rare interviews, he was asked if Mickey Mouse was a child of Ignatz. Harriman simply replied, "Oh, I don't know anything about that," and politely closed the topic. Stan Lee, the creator of Marvel Comics, said, "I love the fact that Crazy Cat looked different than all the others, read differently than the others, and was filled with odd innovations and quirks." Crazy Cat also inspired pioneering lesbian author Jeanette Howard Foster, who recalled that when she received a gun as a gift from her father, she named it Ignatz. Crazy Cat was popular in underground gay culture, in a time when people were discriminated against, misunderstood, or even killed for their sexual orientation, many queer individuals embraced the absurdities of Crazy Cat's ever-changing gender. As crazy as his fame and popularity were, Harriman always seemed unfazed by it. In 1930, Mary Landenberger, a famous journalist known for interviewing celebrities, had a chance to sit down with Harriman. In her interview, Landenberger recalled the reluctant guest had by far the most interesting personality of all the celebrities she had interviewed. She is quoted saying, "Fame means nothing to him. Harriman is a shy little fellow who instinctively recoils from the spotlight of publicity. This modesty is not assumed. It is reflected in every word, every action." Harriman was a family man at heart. He loved his two girls, Toots and Bobby, unconditionally. He had a great relationship with his wife, and he was adored by his fellow cartoonists, who all agreed that he was a very humble and modest man. One of his colleagues, Harry Hirschfeld, said, "If there ever was a saint on earth, it was George Harriman." He often gave away hand-colored weekly comics, as well as original ink and watercolor masterpieces to friends or other lucky strangers. Harriman was an avid vegan, refusing even to kill insects. Toward the later half of his life, he fed many stray cats and dogs his leftovers. During his life, Harriman kept one part of his identity private, and it might have remained completely unknown if not for Arthur Berger, a professor at San Francisco State University. On August 22, 1971, which would have been Harriman's 91st birthday, Berger was attempting to write an entry on George Harriman for the Dictionary of American Biography. In his research, Berger obtained Harriman's birth information from the New Orleans Health Department. To Berger's shock, he noticed that Harriman's birth certificate was marked COL, meaning colored. Harriman, who everyone had known as white, was actually of African descent. This news was spread to the public shortly after its discovery in the San Francisco Sunday Examiner. Such news would have ruined Harriman's career if it had been uncovered during his lifetime. He grew up in a different time with different views and opinions of black and mixed-race individuals. Harriman's African bloodline could be traced back to his great-grandfather, Stephen Harriman. After the Louisiana Purchase in 1803, Stephen Harriman, a white farmer, moved to the newly acquired state and purchased 10 enslaved people to work on his plantation. Stephen died in 1854, leaving his mistress, Justine Oliver, and her two sons, Frederick and George Harriman, behind. Justine Oliver happened to be a free woman of color. Mixed-race marriages were illegal in the 1800s due to miscegenation laws. However, in Louisiana, it wasn't uncommon for white men to have black mistresses and children set up in a secret home, an arrangement known as passage. Harriman's father, George Harriman Jr., married Clara Morrell, a 20-year-old mixed-race native in Louisiana. In 1880, the Harrimans were regarded as Creoles, or persons of mixed European and African descent. However, the Harrimans distanced themselves from their Creole ancestry because they understood the harsh reality of being people of color. Harriman's father saw lynchings and racial violence often in New Orleans. There were also religious complications for the family, as only five Catholic schools in Louisiana would integrate black students into their white classes. For these reasons, George Harriman Jr. decided to relocate his family to Los Angeles in 1890, when George Harriman was 10 years old. Harriman Jr. wanted to shield his children from racial oppression and violence happening in many of the southern states. Plessy v. Ferguson, which was the Supreme Court decision that ruled that racial separation was legal so long as it was equal, would be institutionalized in the U.S. government 2 years later. History would later reveal that separate was never equal. The Harriman family knew that since they were Creoles, they were easily able to pass themselves in many lights because of their dark tan skin color. Since Los Angeles was a clean slate in many aspects for the Harrimans, they made the choice to pass off as white. Racial passing was very risky and a controversial practice. Harriman didn't mention his Louisiana past to others. If ever asked by his colleagues, he claimed that he was raised in the city of Los Angeles to help cover his origins. However, many of his colleagues would jokingly point out his mysterious family background. Harriman would often make up fanciful origin stories to his fellow cartoonists that were attributed to his light brown skin color and, the most telling physical detail of Harriman, his kinky hair. He would make up ideas that his ancestors were French, Irish, or Greek. Harriman was rarely seen without a hat for the majority of his adult life. We can't know for sure, but we can infer that he was conscious of the need to cover his hair and its recognizable texture to help conceal his identity. Harriman's consciousness of his race resonated with him deeply. He struggled with having an inferiority complex that may have also tied into his racial identity. Creative artists express a lot of themselves in their work. Many of the storylines in his comics echo real-life insecurities that can be assumed that Harriman had. One of Harriman's first original cartoon comics, Musical Moe's, created in 1902, highlighted the misadventures of a caricatured black man of the same name. Many times, Musical Moe's would wish that his color would fade so that he could have the same privileges as his white counterparts. Modern standards might regard Musical Moe's as exceptionally racist. However, in light of Harriman's backstory, we can understand that he was commenting on the absurdities of racial discrimination. It can also be interpreted as Harriman trying to move himself as far away from his racial ancestry as he could to ensure that no one would ever doubt his assumed ethnicity. Crazy Cat Comics used many storylines to comment on racism. Crazy's appearance alone was that of a black cat with a zigzag tail. There are many instances where Ignatz, a white mouse, would comment on Crazy's kinky tail. In one storyline, Crazy accidentally bleaches himself white taking a shower, turning his whole body white except for his tail. Perhaps this was a reference to Harriman's hair as the most telling feature of his appearance. There are so many gags throughout the cartoon's run that comment on race and color. Sometimes Ignatz and Crazy switch colors. Other times, Ignatz would be darkened from falling into ink and being called an idiopium mice by Crazy. Once, Crazy's tail even got straightened. In yet another, Crazy is acting as a barista in a coffee shop. Ignatz complains to Crazy that he served him coffee with milk in it, when Ignatz wanted straight black coffee. Crazy replies that the coffee is black if you look under the milk. Crazy had a distinctive way of talking. Harriman never addressed it, but Crazy's dialogue would sound like a racial stereotype of a black person. It became Crazy's trope to comically misspell words, have improper grammar, and to omit a certain southern twang in his dialect. Excluding his childhood, throughout Harriman's life, there was not a single recorded instance where his true racial identity was discovered. Even at the end of his life, it was recorded on April 25, 1942, that Harriman went to Los Angeles Selective Service Board to fill out his own draft card for World War II. He registered as a white 62-year-old man, measuring 5'7" and 128 pounds. Not even Harriman's own daughters knew his true identity. On his death certificate, Harriman's eldest daughter, Toots, listed his place of birth as Paris, France. Harriman intended his secret to die with him. After a long battle with rheumatism, Harriman's liver gave out, sending him into a coma. Many speculate that the rheumatism was the cause. Harriman passed away on April 25, 1944, at the age of 64. It can be said that few people knew Harriman's true identity, but it was all there in his work. His references to racism reflect his opinion of the absurdity of social, economic, and political discrimination based on skin color. He drew himself into Crazy Cat. His struggles were Crazy Cat struggles. In a real sense, Harriman was hiding in plain sight. It would be easy to paint Harriman as something of a coward for hiding his ancestry. The better way to see him is for his artistic and storytelling genius, his willingness to use his platform to comment on racial inequality, and his lasting influence on the artists he inspired. Today, we still honor Harriman with cartooning's most prestigious recognition, the Ignatz Award. This episode was produced with the aid of a grant from the University of Central Oklahoma. Research and writing credits for this episode are from Oklahoma State student Jacob Larson, with additional research assistance provided by Taylor Hill, Dean Kelly, and Colby Streller. Story editing provided by Spencer Gee. Sound design and engineering by the University of Central Oklahoma's Center for E-Learning and Connected Environments. Music by Christina Giacona and Patrick Conlin of Onyx Lane. If you would like to contact me about this episode or about the podcast, please email me at hello@idh.fm. That is hello@idh.fm. Our website can be found at idh.fm. You can also connect with us on Instagram at Incomplete Design History. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.